You are listening to Legion of Substitute Podcasters, episode 297, our top five time travel stories. And welcome to episode 297 of Legion of Substitute Podcasters. It's really actually quite appropriate that this is an episode in which we discuss time travel, because right now, as we record this, wibbly wobbly, timey wimey, I am in a place where there is actually, I got no internet access. I am right now cabin kid and currently, as this would have been recorded, I would currently be enjoying the evening of Father's Day and hanging out with the kids up at the cabin and with my dad as well. So yes, wibbly wobbly, timey wimey, I am cabin kid and you are not.
It's true. I'm not.
Well, I meant that in the Chevy Chase sense.
Fair enough. I am President Ford. No, I will be Wisconsin kid tonight in honor of the fact that same-sex marriage came to Wisconsin now 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
Yay. And that's where Matt's been. Matt's been in gay weddings ever since. As, you know, he's been everything. He's been, you know, the best man, maid of honor, flower girl, you know, you name it, he's been it. And, you know, it's one of those things. That's where he's been. And I know Scotty is just somewhere drinking and singing karaoke tonight. So, and that's wonderful.
Or at least he was. And
or at least he was. He,
and
he's
it broke
in a
him.
Gutter right
yeah,
now.
It broke him for being able to join us. So,
poor guy.
So he's on Medicus One recovering.
Medicus One recovering. Oh, no. Not that one again.
So as we're recording this, full disclosure, folks, look behind the curtain, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, but here we are. Hey. We just of course finished recording our lengthy
Crisis
number 9 episode, and so we thought let's do something a little lighter for the rest of it. So we're going to talk about our favorite time travel stories, because we talk a lot about time travel on this show, and sure. As many of you will know, I have this thing about the whole time is a place thing. So we're going to talk about some of our favorite time travel stories and
non-Legion related.
Yeah, because in fact, I think only one of mine is even comic book related. So, yeah. Although there are connections throughout, but
aren't there always?
Aren't there always?
I was trying not to do comics just because.
Yeah, and I mean, there's so many.
Exactly, and I think we have to give it up to Marvel and Days of Future Past for winning that one, at least at the beginning of really thinking outside the box on time travel. Don't you think?
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet myself.
Well, I mean the comic story.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that one wins for how do you do time travel effectively in a comic.
Yeah, definitely. And it's actually, you know, I mean, there are comic connections in a couple of mine. One of them, actually, I've even got a bonus one. So
yeah. Bonus one. Woo-hoo. Yeah.
So not even top five. I mean, just tops.
Some
of our favorites. So
and we'll have some honorable mentions, I'm sure, at the end.
Exactly. So Darren, why don't you start us off with one of yours?
I will start off with my number, I guess five. Let's say.
Yeah.
It's a movie starring Superman, but it's not a Superman movie. It's Christopher Reeve and Jane Seymour in Somewhere in Time.
Oh, nice.
Which is a romantic movie about a guy who's an actor or playwright, I forget which, and he is met at the theater one night by a very old woman, and all she says to him is, "Come back to me," and leaves him a program for a play that she did way back when she was an actress, and then she goes back home, but then she passes away that night. And so he's still trying to figure out what's going on with all this and what happened, and he goes and he does all his research, and lo and behold, it turns out that he can track down where she was at a certain time in a certain place.
Oh, yeah. And this is, you know, this is a great one because, and it's been a long time since I've seen it. The screenplay was actually written by Richard Matheson, who people may know as the guy who wrote I Am Legend, as well as like 1,000 other stories that have all been mined for movies. And this he adapted this from his 1975 novel Bid Time Return. And
it's a great story.
It really is. And it's, you know, I mean, there's...
And it's so simple.
I love
it's
everything. So simple. Yeah, I love a lot, so much about this movie. They you know, they have this whole... they do the, theme, the music for it. The score was all from Rachmaninoff's... it was his theme from Paganini. And so it's just, you know, there's just so much of this that is beautiful. And what was really neat was, you know, this came out in 1980, so it was a couple of years after Superman. And, you know, there was all that concern that he was going to get typecast and, you know, with the whole, that side of
yeah, he's going to be nothing but a tights guy.
And you know, you see him in this, and it's just...
It's perfect.
This is a great pick. Because, yeah, you get that whole thing with... where he finds that book of... that book about time travel that his old professor had written.
Which is convenient, but we'll go with it.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. You know,
it's a classic sci-fi thing where instead of building a machine to do this, you do it with the power of the mind.
Exactly. And I mean, you get Christopher Plummer in this as well, which is awesome. And yeah, you know what, this is one, if you haven't seen it, then you should. And I don't want to go too deep into the story because I want people to experience this. It's, you know, if you dug Christopher Reeve as Superman, you owe it to yourself to check out this movie to see what else he could do.
True.
And you're going to be in for a great time travel story because it's crazy twisty.
It is. It's very crazy twisty.
And actually, you get an early, very early scene from William H. Macy, and actually George Wendt was in the movie briefly, but his scene got cut. So sorry, sorry, Norm. So yeah, like just lots of different people showing up in this, and a neat connection to this, of course, is that the poor director, he also later got hired to direct the movie Supergirl.
Yeah, he did.
And however,
they're not all winners,
people. They are not. However, what is interesting is, of course, as we'll recall, in seasons 2 and 3 of the show Smallville, Christopher Reeve did guest appearances as Dr. Virgil Swan, and which was, of course, named after Kurt Swan.
Yeah.
And Jane Seymour also showed up in the series in season 4. She was Genevieve Teague, who recurred in the 4th season. So there's that connection. But also, director Jeannot Schwartz, pronounce his name, he directed several episodes of Smallville from season 3 through to season 10. Lots and lots of somewhere in time connections to Smallville, so totally, people, check it out. It's a really cool movie, and an excellent time travel story.
Your turn.
Yeah, my first is actually going to be I'm going to talk about a TV series. Oh boy, yeah, that's right. Quantum Leap.
List of honorable mentions.
Yeah, yeah. And this was one, you know, I think there's, I think to a certain degree, there's a lot of sentiment to it, because this was while I was in university that I watched this show. I had actually missed the first season when it was on. I had no idea about it, but a couple of the guys when I was in second year were raving about this show.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they had seen, like, I had a bunch, you know, I was always a big fan of time travel stories. That was my favorite genre of science fiction, was time travel. And so they had seen that, and they were like, how is it you're into time travel and you haven't watched this show? And
busy.
Yeah like if I'm not in school, I'm working. And yeah, and so so yeah, I started watching it then. And my friend Mark and I used to make it was appointment television for us. You know, we try and get together to watch it, and always enjoyed it, and we're devastated when it eventually ended, especially the way it ended. But there was a lot of great stuff going on, and there was a lot of kind of things where I mean I was a fan enough that, like, when Innovation Comics did the comic series of Quantum Leap, I had every issue. I also bought a ton of the novelizations that were done, that were all very great. Like, they were really good. They really kind of dive deep into a lot of the themes. But he had what I really liked about it was, this is the kind of time travel I really dig. Is when people are doing something in the past, and we're seeing the changes that it brings to the current time.
Mm-hmm.
And not just sort of like a Marty McFly, hey, he comes back and everything's different, but where you actually have people observing those changes. And so, you know, you had some episodes where you'd have Al and Gushy kind of actually observing what was changing. Mm-hmm. And you know, even though the area where they were was supposed to be like a sort of a safe zone, as it were, you know, where they, but that was, but what ended up being safe about it was they could track the changes, because they knew what the differences were. And and so you had a whole lot of that stuff going on. You had Sam Swiss Cheese Brain, and you had him showing up at all kinds of pivotal events in the 20th century. And so it was neat. It was kind of a neat way for them to put together an anthology series of sorts, while mixing it with this really cool science fiction theme. And so that kind of made it able to reach a wider, if not wide enough, audience than just going out with a time travel series. I'm looking at you, Time Tracks, would have, and and which was actually a bit later. But anyway, so yes, Quantum Leap, love it.
Quantum Leap is an excellent choice, sir. Excellent choice. My next one is, we're going to go from serious sci-fi to, well, let's just take time travel to its ridiculous conclusion, shall we? Join me at San Dimas High School, people.
San Dimas High School football rules.
It does.
How
rule.
Did I not have this on my list?
I don't know, but I'm talking about Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Yes, indeed. Aww. Bill S. Preston Esquire and Ted Theodore Logan. Who are two of the worst high school students ever to be made this side of Fast Times at Ridgemont High. They are on the cusp of basically having their band be defunct before it occurs, because stallions. The dad is going to send Ted off to military school if he doesn't pass history. And the only way he's going to pass history is to get a flying colors A on his final. And, you know, Ted's idea of history is, you know, who was Joan of Arc? And his answer was Noah's wife.
That's right.
So, you know, things aren't looking good. So in the far-flung utopian future, the powers that be see this, and they send Rufus, played by George Carlin, the dearly departed George Carlin, to help the boys pass their history exam. And they basically go through time cherry picking historical figures for the presentation to end all presentations at San Dimas High School. It is funny. It's just farcical. I can't say enough about how amusing this movie is. And its use of time travel gets really, insane towards the end of the movie.
Well, it, again, it's that whole idea of changing stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And making immediate changes to things and seeing their effects. And in this case, you have a whole lot of those scenes where they where it's like, oh, if only I had this. No problem, you can go back in time
and put
it there. Oh, here it is.
Here it is. And love it.
And so I imagine the Bill and Ted 1.5, which is basically them going around and actually doing all this stuff. It's like, yeah, we better actually do it.
Yeah.
And I actually met someone a couple of years ago who was the husband of someone Jan had met in a baby class, and he was wearing a San Dimas T-shirt. And it was like San Dimas High School football. And he had no idea what the shirt was all about. He just liked the shirt. And I looked at him, I'm like, hey, San Dimas High School football rules. And he was like, really?
Really? They do?
I had no idea what
You're
I was talking
like,
about.
Oh, no.
It
man.
Was so disappointing. I'm like, I just said, we can't hang out with them. but yeah, that was just a. So much I loved about that movie, and it was just goofy as all heck. And,
yeah, it was fun. It was a fun movie.
Yeah. So. And you got Carlin, too, so.
True.
It's a beautiful thing. And Joan of Arc, of course, played by Jane Wiedlin of the Go-Go's.
I am your singing telegram. Different movie, I know.
Yes, indeed, but all good, all good.
All good.
Great pick. All right, my next one is actually the only comic book on my list.
Really?
Yes, and it is Time Masters.
Oh,
which if you ever talk to DC's director of sales Bob Wayne, he of course will often talk about this one and how much he was pushing to get it traded because of course he was one of the writers.
No wonder.
And if anyone remembers if anyone other than me remembers this, I'll be really impressed. But there was a limited series put out called The Hacker Files.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, and so it was written by a Texas writer named Lou Schiner. And Lou Schiner kind of had, he wasn't generally a comic book guy, although he's written a lot of comics since. Like, he wrote this, The Hacker Files, and... although that actually came after Time Masters, but Wibbly Wobbly. I read it first at the time because I had been away from comics for a while. But Lou Schiner, and his name will show up on my list again. He's a guy who wrote a lot of kind of really interesting sort of sci-fi things where it was kind of sci-fi, but it kind of fit in with... they were more sort of fantastical elements in human stories. And and so he, I've got a few books that he's written. I've probably got a few books that he's read as well. So Lou Schiner was kind of an interesting guy. He also wrote some of the issues of the Wild Cards comic. For those who aren't familiar with Wild Cards, it's the thing that George R. R. Martin did before he did Game of Thrones. He wrote a few of them, but he was also kind of the guy who got a lot of these different people to write these short stories. And so Lou Schiner's character in all that in the original novels was Fortunato, but he also wrote some issues of the comic book that was done. Anyway, so Bob Wayne and Lou Schiner had met at a convention, and they had talked about a lot of this time travel stuff. And after the crisis, they had kind of tried to shut the door on time travel. And they didn't want it to be as easy as it was pre-crisis, where anyone and their brother could somehow find a way to travel through time. Mm-hmm. And so what they did is they decided to tell that using one of the characters, one of the time travel characters, well known in the DC universe, and that was of course Rip Hunter. Now, the original Rip Hunter series, Rip Hunter Time Master, that used to show up in Showcase a lot. And there actually is a Showcase Presents of Rip Hunter. And I highly recommend it, even though it does a lot of that thing I hate, and time
is a place.
Yeah. And so you know, they travel to a lot of, you know, basically the time travel in these is just settings. They never get into any of the ideas of the effects of time travel. You know, the time travel in it is like, hey, we're in, look, we're in Victorian London, or look, we're in the Stone Age. Mm-hmm. And there's never sort of any talk, rarely any talk about the, what will the things that we do.
Do, yeah.
Due to the time stream. And so that's why I don't like time as a place things, because it ignores the idea that, hey, if you're in the past and you're mucking about, things are going to change, what kind of far-reaching effects are small changes going to have? You know, the old butterfly flaps its wings thing. So they had to set out new rules for time travel, so they decided to use Rip Hunter as a character, and they set a whole bunch of rules in place for how you could travel through time in the DC universe, all of which were promptly forgotten.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this was like in 1990 they did this. So it was a few years, like 1989, 1990. It was a few years after Crisis, but it was like, okay, so we've got Booster Gold kind of running around traveling through time, so they used him as part of this, and so there were all these different rules, like a character, you know, a person, once they use one particular method of traveling through time, that option is closed off to them going forward.
Yeah,
because they basically used it up, and that's where you know it became untenable for a lot of you know, because shortly after this they did the Time and Time Again story in Superman, and that's where they kind of laid waste to all this stuff.
All that,
yeah. But so this Rip Hunter series is really neat. It deals, because what it does is it adds a whole other dimension where they deal with, really what it is they're chasing the Illuminati through time.
Ah.
And so, you know, they go back. And so it gets into a lot of that classic Illuminati legend kind of thing. Like the whole idea that they replaced George Washington with a guy named Adam Weishaupt. And so they got into a lot of the conspiracy theory stuff. So if you're a fan of conspiracy theory stories, you'll love this. If you're a fan of time travel stories, you'll love this. Because all of that stuff's in play. And so, yeah, that's why it's one of my favorites. It's a series that I had missed one issue of.
Uh-huh.
And it took me years to find it. I bought the other issues, because, again, this is when I was coming back into comics. So I bought all the issues, but I was missing one. And so at every convention I went to, I looked for it, and it was only about 3 years ago that I found it, 3 or 4 years ago. The way you can find out exactly when it was is find out when the trade came out, because, of course, I completed the series right before they traded it, because that's how I roll.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just a few years back that they finally did a trade. I bought the trade anyway, because I want to support the series. So we would, of course, see Rip Hunter make his way into the Linear Men. We would also see him come into contact with Booster Gold once again. We'd also see him in 52. Good grief. You know, he was a big part of 52 as well. And then we would later learn that there was a familial connection between himself and Booster Gold. But he was never as cool as he was in the Time Master series, because he was a deeply flawed character who was obsessed with traveling through time. He was obsessed with all this stuff to the exclusion of everything else, and it made him a very interesting character. So Time Masters, the 1990 series, which you can find in trade, is one of my other picks. So there we go.
Fair enough. Well, we kind of mentioned him already in passing, because you can't have a time travel discussion without mentioning a certain DeLorean.
Oh, yes.
I mean, come on. If you were a kid in the 80s, this was the time travel story of your generation. And I'm talking about Marty McFly and Doc Brown in Back to the Future.
Bum, bum, bum.
And we're just going to do the whole series. I mean, that theme is so iconic.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what it is. I mean, they had a ride at Universal for this franchise for several years till The Simpsons took over that house. So it was really cool. And you get into a DeLorean, which they made for what, a minute?
Yeah, seriously.
And you get up to 88 miles per hour.
And you're going to see some serious shit.
You're going to see some serious shit. and isn't it funny that he got the radioactive material from the Libyans? Because those were the bad guys in the
80s. That's right. That's right.
Well, of course, that would be changed now, I'm sure, to the Taliban. But
yeah.
It's just the way it is. Back then, it was the Libyans. It's a great story about a kid who's not doing so great in high school, and love life's kind of okay but not perfect, and family life is kind of crazy, and he goes back in time to avoid being killed by the Libyans, and he has to stop some things from happening, but unfortunately him showing back in time, he meets his mom, and his mom grows smitten with him.
She's hot.
And that's all kind of uncomfortableness. And, of course, she calls him Calvin because why? His underwear says Calvin Klein on it.
Mm-hmm. Because, of course, you write your name on the wristband.
Of course you do.
She just assumed that you also embroider it.
Mm-hmm. So it's a fun story with little, like, nods here and there to fun things that were going on in the 50s because that's when their parents met. I think it's iconic just because it is a simple story, and it did leave the door open for a successful trilogy, which took us into the future where things were bad. And I have to say, an iconic villain in Biff. He's the iconic bully.
Oh, Biff
through
Tannen,
the whole series.
Why don't you make like a tree and get out of here?
Get out of here. You knew the manure scene was going to happen in every movie. You just knew it was going to happen, and they made it happen even in the Wild Wild West, which was just impressive. I'm assuming everyone out there seeing Back to the Future, there's no reason for me to pontificate about its greatness.
If you haven't, get your ass down and watch it. This is one I rewatch often. It's a series I'm a huge fan of. In fact, I was out for dinner with a friend of mine just the other night, and invariably that movie will come up when we talk. And we were talking about just so much great in that movie, you know, and for any of its flaws, it's really easy to look past them. I think what we were talking about was somehow it was the Marvin Berry scene that came back to us.
Oh yeah.
And calling my wife and him saying something that I had said and repeating it. Did you hear what he just said? And then immediately we're both thinking it, but he was the one who said it. It's like, it's me, your cousin, Marvin Berry. and so this got us into talking Back to the Future for ages. It's a great time travel story. It's just a great story, period, and a lot of fun. Ugh.
Also, when someone's being kind of dumb, you know, you're going to say, hello, McFly. Hello.
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah.
And, so, you know, it's iconic pop culture. So, yes, absolutely. If you haven't seen it, you should make the time, sit down, and see it. It's actually very kid-friendly, except for a couple times where they yell, shit, because manure is about to be piled on top of them.
Exactly.
So, in context, they're not lying, but, you know. Very but other true. Than that, yeah, I think it's fairly...
Fairly
teenage
innocuous.
Kid appropriate. Yeah.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I mean, we were what, 14, 15 when it came out.
Yeah.
Totally, I remember I was working at a theater at the time that it came out, and I watched that movie a lot that week. A lot. That's the first one. Oh man. And just awesome. All right. My next one.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, Mr. Lewis Shiner comes up in the list. This is a book I picked up years ago, sometime around 1996. I'm in a bookstore and I see this, because back in those days, kids, they sold books in stores.
Yeah, they did.
And so I was in one, and there's this cover with this guy who's sitting listening to headphones in a big chair, kind of looked like that old Maxell ad used to look. Maxell was a company that made things like tapes, and that's what people used to record stuff on. Mm-hmm. And above him is the sort of star field with the faces of Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, and John Lennon, all of whom I was a fan of. And so it was the winner of the World Fantasy Award for Best Novel, it said.
Wow.
And had great reviews from people as far-flung as Rolling Stone, William Gibson, Timothy Leary.
Oh God!
Yeah, it was. Okay, I kind of got to check this out. So, so I thought, well, you know, being a big music fan, I was like, oh, this is interesting. And then I started reading the back, and it says, "There's no time like the present to fix the past." And I'm like, it's music and time travel. I'm so in. And it's about this guy named Ray Shackelford, who. He's a guy that basically repairs, he never kind of made anything of himself. He basically repairs stereos and stuff. Stereos are things that people used to listen to music on, kids. And and so he has this talent to call forth the music that never was. It was these music masterpieces that were rumored but never realized by the legends of a bygone era. So, you know, he basically there were these talks of the albums, you know, that these guys were working on, but they never finished because something went wrong. And he's able to suddenly channel these things and hear them and you know, hear these songs that never became, you know, things like, you know, if the Beatles had still been getting along with each other when they did Let It Be, how much better that would have been. And Brian Wilson's, the Beach Boys' Smile album, what would have happened if that had been finished? And of course, like since reading this book, they of course did get finished, which was kind of neat. Mm-hmm. And so this book was incredibly influential upon me, to the point where like I had several copies of this book and gave it to a lot of friends.
Oh,
it's like one of those books where I was just like, you have to read this. It's like currently on my bookshelf, there are two copies of it. Mm-hmm. And one of which I wanted to get that original cover that I had seen because it was later released under a different cover. And it was like when years later, when I was going through a divorce, it was like there were parts of this that I read and a friend of mine who read this book, one of the people I gave it to, read it and was like, oh my God, I see so much of this in you. And then I learned later that it was actually, there were elements that were autobiographical as well. Less the time travel-y stuff. But anyway, so if you're a big fan of music and time travel stories, Glimpses by Lewis Shiner is a good one to check out.
Very cool.
I think I needed to mention the title because I don't think I had.
Yeah, I don't think you did. I was waiting for you to get to that. I'm like, so what's the name of this book that's so great, Paul? Wouldn't that be an ultimate twist? Indeed. And speaking of ultimate twists, my next pick. A little island somewhere. Somewhere. No one knows exactly where. And on that little island, there are a group of Losties.
Nice.
Which you know, at first, it was all Mystery Island. That's what it was. It was Mystery Island redone. You knew something was off. You didn't know what. And it took a couple of seasons to kind of get to the point where you're like, oh, so something's going on here.
Yeah.
That's possibly connected to this and possibly connect. Okay, there's some weird, yeah, that's freaky. And then you start seeing black smoke creatures and people start doing weird things, but then someone turns a frozen donkey wheel and
yes.
Everyone goes berserk. And this was time travel basically as a defense and as a weapon, it turns out.
Yeah.
And the episodes that I'm particularly fond of in Lost are the Desmond.
Oh, the Constant. Episodes. The Constant was just...
The Constant was perfect.
Yeah.
The episode... The first time I had a feeling that time travel had something to do with Lost was the episode and the scene where Desmond runs into... Oh, what's her name? The older woman in the jewelry shop. I forget the character's name.
And she was what's-his-name's mother.
Yeah. She was Faraday's mother.
Yeah.
And Desmond goes in there to buy a ring for his fiance, Penny, or the woman he wants to be.
Eloise Hawking.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And Hawking. Yeah, Stephen Hawking.
Yeah, exactly.
They did that a lot on this show. and he's... She shows him the ring. He looks at the ring and says, "I'll take it." And she's like, "Excuse me?" She's like, he's like, "No, I'll take it." And she's like, "No, you won't." And you're like, "What just happened here?" And she proceeds to tell him, "You're not going to buy this ring because you don't buy this ring. And you leave this place and walk out that door. And you call her and you say you can't be her, you know, betrothed, and you get on a yacht and you sail around the earth and you go to an island where you are lost, and you will have to press a button every day for the rest of your life, or the rest of us all die." You know, it's like, this happened how many years ago? And she knows what's going to happen to him in the future, because this is all the stuff that happened to him in the future. And that's when my ears kind of perked up in that Scooby-Doo pose, you know.
Yeah.
Something's now not right officially about this whole scenario. And while some of the ending may not have evolved the way I liked it to, I have to say they gave an excellent story overall.
Mm-hmm.
With all the characters involved and the time travel elements and all that stuff. So yes, I have to recommend Lost as one of my favorite time travel stories.
Very nice. My next one is actually a 3-book series that I read this friend that I used to watch Quantum Leap with all the time gave to me. Oh. And so it was 3 novels. It was called Time Warrior. And as far as I know, there was only 3 of them. I've often looked for them since. I mean, I have the paperbacks, so I mean, I don't need to get the books again. But it's always that, is there another one? And essentially it was about these 2 graduate students who needed to restore the world's time track. And so let me give you this. So the time, 1942. The place, Tobruk. The war, World War II, the African campaign. History was dead until an experimental time transference device was fashioned in a top secret lab. Now history is very much alive, and graduate student Jim Tiber is caught in a war fought on its most famous battlegrounds. But this battle is one of the hardest and bloodiest ever. The desert campaign between Field Marshal Rommel's Lightning Warriors, the Africa Corps, and Major General Montgomery's Glorious Eighth Army. And time is running out. Yeah. And so you had a whole lot of stuff where, like, the things that they were doing were having an effect on it. So you had people monitoring the their exploits in time back in this lab. And in the second book, he found himself in the middle of Saigon in 1968 during, of course, Vietnam. However, the Vietnam War was very different from what we knew, because it had been turned. It basically, their enemies. They call them the Iron Men. They were a bunch of KGB hardliners. This was late 80s. So they were kind of rewriting history, and they kind of had converted Vietnam into World War III. And then the last book was called Day of the Snake, and this involved... them rewriting history in Pearl Harbor. Uh-huh. And so they ended up everywhere from the halls of the Third Reich to the skies over Pearl Harbor to the boudoir of King Arthur's Guinevere.
Oh my.
Yeah, so lots of fun time travel stuff, and lots of my favorite stuff, because it was all those building all those little paradoxes. And uh-huh. And that's kind of the thing I love about time travel, is when they create these little these loops that mess everything up, and mm-hmm. and they've got to fix that kind of stuff. And so if you can find it, it's the Time Warrior series by Matthew J. Costello. The first one was Time of the Fox, the second was Hour of the Scorpion, and the last was Day of the Snake.
Ah, there you go. Indeed. Well, okay, my last one. Come on, we can't have this discussion without mentioning the Doctor, can we?
Thank you.
I'm serious. I mean, the Doctor is the shiz, the ruler of all time, and all that jazz.
Yes.
No matter who it is wearing the fez or the smoking jacket or the scarf or the umbrella or the coat or whatever, Doctor Who is a Time Lord. And he's proven it by that franchise's success over how many years now?
Good Lord. Just over 50, in fact.
Just over 50. Yeah. You know, that's longer than a lot of the heroes we talk about, kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, Give it one for the Doctor, because it doesn't matter who is playing the Doctor, the Doctor will live on, and that whole regeneration bit is perfect for the structure of TV.
It's genius. It really is. And you know, I what got me back into it, Scott's who got me back into Doctor Who. Of course, I watched it as a kid. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I was very familiar with Pertwee and Tom Baker, but kind of fell out of it after that. Okay. Tried to get into it in university. Again, my friend Mark, knowing that I loved time travel, was like, you know, like he threw the Time Warrior series at me. He's like, we should check out some Doctor Who stuff. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, it was 1989. It wasn't as easy to find.
Yeah, it was on public broadcasting here for us.
Oh yeah, I mean, and we that's where I grew up watching it. Was mm-hmm. You know, like my grandfather was a huge Doctor Who fan, and I can remember watching some Pertwee stuff with him mm-hmm. in the early, you know, and this would have been in the early 70s. So I guess that's the BBC was doing some reruns of it. I guess.
Yeah,
I can't remember exactly when Baker took over, but that's the stuff I, you know, so that's kind of the Tom Baker stuff's the stuff I really remember. Mm-hmm. And
see, Davison was my Doctor.
See, yeah, that's a little later on, yeah. Mm-hmm. And at one point, when Jen and I were on our honeymoon, she had mentioned about getting some old Doctor, you know, like, we should see if we can find some old Doctor Who stuff, because she's like, I used to love watching that, and you'd like it. You like time travel stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know, we did. Like, we've ordered some of it, but I hadn't watched much of the new stuff. And it wasn't until Scott was really into it, and he's like, yeah, you got to check this out.
Oh, yeah, the new stuff is really brilliant.
Oh, it's awesome. It's so good. So good. And so that's really where I got back into it. And yeah, you're right. There is no discussion of time travel is complete without the Doctor.
It's true.
Which has a nice tie-in, because back a while back on this very show.
On this very show?
Yeah, on this very show, we interviewed a fella who was a big fan of the Doctor.
Ah.
And
that'd be all of them, probably.
Well, quite possibly, but we actually discussed it, and one of the things that we were talking about with him was, of course, he was going to be writing a crossover series with the Legion. Hey, oh, Legion Connection,
right?
And he of course did the Star Trek and Legion series, and I speak, of course, of Chris Robertson. Mm-hmm. Well, when we first learned that we were going to be interviewing Chris, I wanted to check out some of his other stuff. And, you know, I'd liked the comic work that I'd read of his. You know, he had done that Cinderella series. And so I'd read a few things that he had done in comics. I'd read a bit of iZombie at that point. And but one that I really wanted to check out was his novel Here, There, and Everywhere. Mm-hmm. Which kind of started the whole Roxanne Bonaventure series, and where she gets a gift that changes her life. A dying woman gives her a gift, and she becomes a singular creature with no analog or equivalent. So she is able to travel anywhere in space and time, not only through times that were and will be, but also through the worlds that could have been and might someday be. And it starts off, you know, again, anything that connects music and time travel to me is something I want to be a part of.
Yep.
All right. So it starts off with this great story about the Beatles and around the time of the anthology. And you end up with kind of an alternate history version of that, and then you get into how this little girl travels through time, and he actually expanded this into a few books, and it's great stuff. I know like Matt's read a lot more of it than I have, but my favorite of them is Here, There, and Everywhere. By Chris Robertson, and I know you can get it easily because I managed to get it so that I was able to read it before we interviewed him, and I was able to find it on Amazon at the time. Well, because it doesn't look like it's a Hash App book, so you should be able to find it.
Mm-hmm.
Down
boy.
But yeah, so he did this series. It was the Bonaventure Carmody universe, and so it's a universe of alternate history. It all ties into like this group that he was in with Bill Willingham and Matt Sturgis, they did this thing called Clockwork Storybook.
Mm-hmm.
And so this kind of stemmed out of that, and then he had he followed that up with this book Paragea. Anyway, there's a whole bunch of them. It's well worth checking out. And then he had that Set the Seas on Fire, which features Hieronymus Bonaventure, and then The End of the Century, where we see Roxanne again. And it's really cool stuff. Great time travel stuff. Again. Where stuff affects what happened elsewhere, and it gets really nutty and loopy, and I know that a lot of people, when they talk about time travel, that's the stuff they hate. That's why they hate time travel stories, is because mm-hmm. they hate when it changes stuff, and they're like, oh, what are we gonna do? And
it changed stuff. It happened this way one time, but then it went back and got revised.
And see, for me, that's the stuff. That stuff that other people hate about time travel stories. That's the stuff I love about them, and this has it in spades. So,
indeed.
So there we go.
Are you ready for the honorable mentions?
Yes.
And it seems sad that this one's an honorable mention. None of us mentioned The Time Machine by H.G. Wells.
That's
like, I guess it's just so beyond us now. It's kind of a basic story, but it's the first one, really. So we have to kind of give it its props.
Well, let's remember that's that image in the Star Trek Legion crossover where he showed all of those different time travel machines.
True.
Including the Wells time machine, including the TARDIS, including the phone booth, the Bill and Ted phone booth. In fact, most of the items that we've discussed in here made
were
an appearance
in that
in
scene.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so let's not forget that. You're right. That's absolutely pivotal. And I think when I was compiling my list, my initial reason for leaving it out was, in fact, because it was like, oh, that's kind of low hanging fruit.
Yeah, well,
I kind of take that one as a given. Again, very much a time is a place thing.
Yep.
Because of course, for the most part, he travels forward.
Yep, that's true.
And so we don't get to see sort of what the mucking about in the past would do.
Mm-hmm. And I've got two classic Star Trek moments. Not the reboot of the series. Star Trek, The City on the Edge of Forever, where Kirk has to make the decision of, if this woman doesn't get killed, then the Nazis will win World War II.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course he falls in love with her,
yeah.
Like you do. Just because it's fun, Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home with the whales. Come on, it's just fun.
Well, I go back to and all of my time travel stuff seems to connect to my old friend Mark, and I really should give him a call.
You should.
I really should, because a lot of this really connects back to
him. Money for this podcast.
Seriously, right? Yeah, I'm cutting him in for like my half.
half of nothing.
Done.
Okay.
Done. But in our first year of university, he actually, which was 1989, blah, 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 he introduced me to Star Trek The Next Generation for the first time. I hadn't watched any of it at that point. Mm-hmm. And the first episode that he showed me was Yesterday's Enterprise.
Ah, okay.
again, this, and so I was immediately hooked because, again, it's the kind of time travel story I love. Stuff happens and it changes shit. And so I'll never forget him. We were supposed to be studying for an exam, and he was like, "Oh, let's just watch this." And we watched it, and I was like, "Let's watch it again," because that was cool. Mm-hmm. and so this is where we first had our first discussion about time travel stories, and that led to us spending a lot of time talking about different time travel stories and really kind of messing about with them. And somewhere there's this little writing project that we were passing back and forth back in those days, where we had created a little time traveling team. And it was this sort of lengthy sci-fi novel that was basically like, okay, you take them for 20 pages, then I take them for 20 pages. And it was like, how can we fuck with the other guy?
Oh, so it was DC Challenge.
It's essentially.
We saw how that turned out, kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's something that will enough. Never be on a podcast.
No way.
And I guess my last one, honorable mention, has to go to, J.K. Rowling did a lot of stuff that was successful. And I think Harry Potter as a series is successful, but I kind of got to call her out on the time turner thing because it was introduced, I think, way too early in the series.
Yeah.
Because those other five books could have been solved with the generous application of time turner.
Absolutely. Just saying. Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah.
So, I think it's somewhere between those two movies you had to show that, like, this was, like, the only one and something horrible happened to it to kind of give yourself the out on that. But that mm-hmm. never occurred. But, that's me being a sticky wicket. But still, I thought it was a cool idea that you had to turn the thing and then, you couldn't be seen by anyone and, that kind of stuff. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with a lot of that stuff. I'm really looking forward to it because I don't think it'll be too long until I'll be able to start doing those, going through those stories with Ella, and I think she's gonna love that stuff. Right now, we're doing the Three Musketeers, so it'll take some time. Speaking of traveling through time, because that for me is that was one of my favorite books when I was like five or six, so we read a little bit of it every night, and Harry Potter's kind of on that list. Because most of my time travel novels are a little dicey as far as content goes, so I gotta hold off a little. Let her understand linear narrative first before it gets all non-linear.
True. Yeah. Don't hit her with the wibbly wobbly stuff just quite yet.
Exactly. So I think that pretty much covers us here.
Yeah.
But folks, what we want to hear is, what are your favorite time travel stories? What are your favorite tropes of time travel? Because you know what the great thing is we've got at least another couple of time travel episodes in us, not including getting Maddie and Scott to share their favorite time travel stories, because they got them.
I can tell you Scott's right now, how he time traveled from the bar home. That's going to be interesting.
But we've got that. We can definitely do that, and we can also just talk about different methods used in different stories to travel through time. So I don't think this is our last time travel episode. And I know this because I traveled into the future and saw we had a shitload of them. So there you go.
Ah, sweet.
Yeah. So anyway, comments, as always, are welcome at legionofsubstitutepodcasters@gmail.com. You can join us in the conversation on our Facebook page, and this is where you should leave all your different time travel thoughts and stories. That is found at facebook.legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com. We are on the Twitter. We are LOSP Podcast. And in addition to all these things, you can join us on on our website at legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com, and you can leave a comment on this or any episode. And with that, we make our way back into the time bubble or the San Dimas phone booth or the DeLorean, whatever you choose. And we're going to make our way back to the 21st century, which is not a place. No. It is a time. It is a frame of mind. It is a way of being. And we will see you all next week.
Doctor!